Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. She uses all of these skills to address the subjects we all struggle with in this conversation with the reluctant therapist. Happy Tuesday, Elizabeth.
Happy Tuesday, Hank. Also include in there a proud daughter.
A proud daughter.
Proud daughter of my father, I guess is how we ought to say that. Because we're coming up on Father's Day this Sunday, and so I thought, you know, what better way to honor our fathers and to have a conversation about the changing roles of fathers in our culture and kind of our, the interesting dynamic that we have when we talk about our mothers and our fathers. This weekend I traveled to Chicago. That has nothing to do with my father, but I went to Chicago with my husband, and on the plane back and forth, I read 121 different interviews, conversations that my students had with their elders. It's one of their assignments. And so it was interesting because they're sent out into the community to find elders to speak with and hear about their lives and just have a conversation and learn about their perspective. And in reading all these conversations and thinking about my show today, it was so clear the difference in these two eras of family, fatherhood, and marriages between the elders that are 75 and up and the millennials or, you know, parents, the younger parents of today, 40 and below, and how the in-between generation, kind of my generation from 40 to 75, was really kind of caught in the collision between these two styles of being, of parenting, you know, because the elders pretty much across the board had traditional marriages where the father was out, you know, doing the resource work, making the living, and the woman was home raising the children, and most of them waxed, about how they had these really strong bonds and their marriages were very tight and they really liked their roles. And even though the fathers, you know, weren't involved in the day-to-day, it worked. And then reading an inner conversation after conversation, you know, it was interesting that this was like a time where you kind of men knew how to be men and women knew how to be women. And then we had the feminist movement, which really impacted my generation's style of parenting, where all of a sudden everything was blowing up. Those traditional roles weren't as acceptable. And we started talking a lot about people feeling that their father was absent or not involved in their life. They were doing the same things their fathers had done, going out and making a living. But in this new era, this new generation, it didn't sit well with the emerging new style of families. Children were feeling like their father wasn't a part of their lives. And the way we worked changed because in that era, we started to see the rise of fathers who, you know, traveled for business. Families were moving across the country every 18 months, 2 years, as fathers tried to go up the commercial ladder. And so families were displaced, moving. So it was a really kind of a complex and conflictual time, this post-feminist movement. And then I talked to my son-in-law about the show, and he's a new father. My granddaughter's 19 months. And he and his friends have this whole emerging new style of seeing their role as fathers. The Will Smith generation, who are really involved with their children's lives and really wanting to make a difference. And so I thought it'd be interesting to talk about the collision of these three different worlds and how we feel about fathers and fathering, our own experiences and how it's impacted our lives. So I'm curious, you know, when you hear these three descriptions, do any of those descriptions kind of resonate with your experience with your father? What would you say on Father's Day?
My father was exactly in the first camp that you explained. He was constantly working. He had a full-time job. I grew up in Orange County. He had a job teaching school in L.A., and because of the traffic situation, he would leave the house every morning at 5 a.m. To drive 55 miles to his high school in L.A. County. And then after school, he always had a second job at the school teaching driver training for the kids. That was an extra monetary job. On the weekends, he was a sports umpire. That was a third job. He worked for the post office during Christmas time sometimes, and then on the odd Sunday when he didn't have anything else going on, he would play golf as a leisure activity. So I didn't get to see him a lot. We were well provided for. We had a comfortable home, and we didn't want for anything. But, I certainly didn't see him before work at 5 a.m., and he'd usually get home at 6 or 7 or 8 o'clock at night.
And that was I mean, the norm, I think, for our generation, our fathers were doing that work, and it was what was expected of them. I think, and especially for even their fathers, they were kind of following that model of, if I provide for the family and I am stoic and I, you know, am not over emotional and I am the head of the household, I'm doing my job, and that's my contract in this situation. And then did you feel the shift, though? Because, you know, at some point we moved from the sense of this is what fathers do to provide for the family to the father was always absent and unengaged, and the children, you know, really suffered from the absence of the father. Did you feel that?
I don't know that I suffered. I think that there was definitely a feeling that why do my mom and I get along so well? It's because we spend so much time together and do things together and go shopping together and have fun together. And he was just typically not around for that. I mean, once in a while, like on an odd weekend day, we would all get together and do something. But it was, I wouldn't say that we were strangers, but I was certainly more well acquainted with my mother.
Well, and it's interesting because every year, you know, we do a Mother's Day show. And as you know, those calls flow in. When we talk about our mothers, it tends to be about the saintedness of motherhood and how hardworking they are and how selfless they are and how we've all been impacted by our mothers. And then when I propose the Father's Day show, and this happened last year and the year before, people will call and start to say, you know, I didn't have a close relationship with my father, or he was distant, or he was absent. It was really a struggle. And then they'll launch into, but my mother. And then it kind of goes back to a praise of the motherhood or the mothers in the situation. And I wonder, like, how did we get there? Why are these relationships so emotional? And I invited, you know, four different male friends to come in and be my guest today and talk about it. And they all kind of were reticent. It's like, it's a little too emotional. Can't go there. I'll talk all day about my mom. But I just, you know, the conflicts or the sense of ambivalence or about my relationship with my father. And yet when I asked my son-in-law and some of the younger men, my college students, they have a much different experience. They're tight with their fathers. They feel like they were mentors. They feel like they really gained a lot of wisdom from them. They felt close with them. It's kind of the fathers that raised our children, my husband and his cohort of friends, had the luxury of being much more involved in their children's lives, maybe because post-feminist movement, they were able to participate more fully and were encouraged to. And so I think it's interesting to see how these relationships have changed and morphed over the last few decades. So I'm going to see where that takes us today.
Okay. Sounds like a good one.
This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. You can listen to previous shows at kcbx.org or find us on iTunes or the App Store, A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. You can be involved in the conversation by going to our Facebook page and also send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. And as we're talking about these different styles of fatherhood or what it is to be a man in our culture today, I think there's, you know, two kind of pop culture references we can look at. The song of Harry Chapin from 1974, Cats in the Cradle. You remember that song? That kind of came right in the emerging feminist movement. And he talked so painfully about kind of that disconnect between father and son, that father longing. And then kind of modern songs, Will Smith did a remake of Just the Two of Us, talking about the joys of fatherhood. And so I thought, let's couch the show today in those two songs. And Hank, let's listen a little bit to Harry Chapin's Cats in the Cradle, kind of bring us back to that time in 1974 when we were just emerging into this consciousness of the relationships between children and their fathers and how important they were in our well-being.
A child arrived just the other day. He came to the world in the usual way, but there were planes to catch and bills to pay. He learned to walk while I was away, and he was talking for I knew it. And as he grew, he'd say, I'm gonna be like you, Dad. You know I'm gonna be like you. And the cats in the cradle and the silver spoon, little boy blue and the man on the moon. When you're coming home, Dad, I don't know.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and if you're just tuning in, this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, and that's Harry Chapin singing Cats in the Cradle from 1974. And so I'm proposing today that we talk about Father's Day and those relationships that we have? And how do you feel about your relationship with your father? As I mentioned, I asked my male friends to come on the show and talk about their relationships, but instead they were more comfortable kind of sending me their answers. And the questions that I asked were, how was your relationship with your father growing up? How are you different or alike your father? Different than or like your father? How has the role of fathers changed in your lifetime? What do you think defines 21st century masculinity? How has masculinity changed in our culture? And the last question I asked them was, how can we best mentor and raise the next generation of young men to be fathers? And it was interesting getting the feedback. Again, you know, the idea that my father was stoic from one of my friends, or wasn't a real emotional guy, was out of town a lot, wasn't really available, did his job taking care of the family, because my father was in the military, another one of my friends said, he was following very much that military mindset of being strong and silent. We had to have respect and discipline in the home. When I asked my friends, you know, how are you different or alike from your father? A lot of them said, you know, talked about how they had similar interests in music, or had similar takes on how to communicate, or maybe they had the same sense of humor. But when it came to differences, a lot of it was about being more open-minded, more connected to their emotions, feeling closer to their children, having a more equal or egalitarian relationship with their wives, really enjoying the presence of strong women. When I asked about how the role of fathers have changed, it was a lot of conversation, or a lot of answers about being much more hands-on with their children, feeling free enough to be able to be really involved in their children's lives, and not feeling constricted by the roles that their own fathers had kind of fallen into. So I'm curious to know how this resonates with you, if it does at all. What would you like to say about your father on Father's Day? Do you have any trouble talking about that relationship? Is it something fraught with emotion? Or are you easy to talk about who your father has been in your life? To be part of our conversation, the number is 805-781-3875. 781-3875. You know, it's not that I'm confused about why we have conflicts with our relationship with our fathers. I get that. I mean, there have been volumes and volumes written about father wounds and the absence of fathers, and how it's very difficult to connect with a father who wasn't raised to have the same communication styles. I understand how we've gotten to the place where we are with kind of this collision of two or three different worlds. But what's interesting is that we never seem to go beyond kind of our experience or how we talk about fathers in general. We tend to demonize the father who is absent, or that has abandoned or seemingly abandoned a family or abandoned children. But we rarely talk about, like, how did they become who they were? How do men learn to be fathers? How do men learn to be men? How have we developed these social norms? And it's interesting, because if you look at the elders of my students' interviews, they were doing everything correct in the cultural norm. They were providing an income and being disciplinarians and maybe authoritarians and kind of the head of the households, and their wives were supporting the father's decisions. But then things shifted. And so it no longer was okay to just do as your father did, post-feminist movement, you know, probably around the 50s and 60s and 70s when things started to shift, mid-60s and 70s. It was not okay just to do as your father did, that there had to be a new definition or a new ideal of how fathers should behave. And that's where things started to split. That's where we started to kind of see this demonizing of the cats in the cradle father who was leaving for work or always too busy to throw the ball, as being just that father's weaknesses in engaging with his children. But instead, he really was just doing what was demanded of him in our culture. He was doing just what was expected of him as a father. And yet, instead of kind of recognizing this shift, this tectonic shift in our culture, It came much more about a whole generation of fathers who we called deadbeat dads or uninvolved fathers or absent fathers. And the other thing that we don't talk about, and I want to be careful again not to demonize women at this time, but what we don't really talk about is that post-feminist movement, when we had divorces at the highest rates ever in our cultural history, two-thirds of divorces were requested by the wives, and it still is that way today. Two-thirds of all divorces are initiated by women. And what was really interesting about the high rate of divorces at that time, post-feminist movement, was that we had nothing in place to help fathers stay engaged in their family system. That we didn't have laws that really protected the relationship or custody or visitation. We hear a lot about fathers who didn't pay alimony or didn't pay child support or weren't involved, but we don't talk about this really interesting piece of it, which is that for a lot of fathers, they were kind of pushed out of the family system at that time. People got remarried and started new families. We didn't understand the impact that had on children when their fathers just disappeared and a new father came in. A lot of women were angry and wanting to, you know, kind of start their own lives and not have this sense of being dominated by a male, and they wanted to be single mothers, and they kind of pushed men out of the system, didn't have space for them. So we don't really talk about like that full picture of what happened when things shifted in the culture. Instead, we heard Cats in the Cradle and we all cried. Or the song Daddy Don't You Walk So Fast. Do you remember that one? Where the little girl's trying to keep up with her dad as he's leaving. And it's, again, it depends. Every family story is different. Not every family had a father that just picked up his bag and went out for a smoke and never came back. And not every family had a father that wanted to stay engaged and was displaced. My point is, something shifted at that time. And I think as a result, we've really struggled for the last 30 years to make sense of the role of fathers and men in our lives. And I'm curious to know how that's impacted you. 781-3875. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and you're listening to Public Radio KCBX. Joni, are you there?
Oh, hello.
Hello. What's on your mind today?
Oh, well, I've been listening to you, and I just wanted to weigh in and say that I probably have one of the best fathers there could have been. Although he was off working in the community, and I felt like he belonged to the community first, and then my mom, and then the children. He always gave us a sense of pride in what he put into our community, and he inspired my sisters and myself to be in the helping professions. We have an RN, a social worker, and a school psychologist in our family, and it's because he inspired us to give to others and be aware of our impact on others. And ironically, I do agree with also what you were just saying, in that because he was in private practice as a physician, when people made house calls still, I chose to have a spouse was at home and worked out of the home because I wanted him to be around more than my dad was. So, and I'm of the baby boom generation.
So you were right at that collision space also. But I appreciate you're honoring the legacy of your father and those gifts that he passed down that you see in your family today. Thank you, Joni. Thank you for taking the time to call. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. James, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Kind of like your previous caller, I just wanted to pay homage to my father. I am 40, and my dad was a great example of fatherhood to me and my siblings, and gave me a lot of tools that I use today in parenting my boys, and very much appreciate that. And also kind of wanted to submit an idea that maybe fatherhood was more involved with the children in the home before the Industrial Revolution, and as industry crept in and more people moved off farm and off out of the homestead into the workplace that took them away from home. And then with the war, I watched my grandfathers emotionally distant from the home because I think they were processing the horrors of the war that they lived through. And then, you know, my dad coming back around. And I think what we're seeing is a resurgence of the nurturing aspect of fatherhood in today's generation of dads.
Go ahead. No, I agree, James, and I'm glad you brought that up because I think I've mentioned on the show before that there really was this shift. You know, the farm families were much more egalitarian because the dads were there and the kids worked and the mom worked and everyone right kept things going. And so fathers were much more involved in the day-to-day discipline and teaching and mentoring their children. And there really was that shift when fathers started going into the factories and women were going into town to work. But I haven't made the connection before about World War I and World War II, what happened to the men when they returned from this. And to this day, and it was interesting in the conversations with elders, a lot of the men that were that my students talked to had fought in World War II and to this day still don't talk about it. To this day are uncomfortable speaking of what they experienced. So I imagine that had a huge toll on their relationships and ability to connect with their children.
Yeah, and both of my grandfathers were that way. And I think maybe, you know, there's a certain level of violence that entered into society through the industrialization of our world. And that wasn't really present in most people's lives before we started working in factories and you know, you know, for myself, I just wanted to also make note of the word husband. Mm-hmm. A lot of us as fathers are also husbands, mm-hmm. and that word carries with it a lot of connotation around nurture and care and, you know, gentleness and patience, and it harkens back to a rural agricultural time and the patience and care and nurturing that was required in that role of the husband, not just of the wife, but of the family, and not just of the family, but the household. And I take a lot of comfort in that word. So,
in the nurturing aspect, in the role of husband, yeah. Well, and the thing, and if you don't mind, I keep you a second longer, James. The next piece of our collisions of different eras of fathering, one of the distressing patterns we're seeing is this kind of post-millennials, this 25 and under group or 30 and under group that's coming up, we're actually seeing a couple interesting shifts. And one is that 2/3 of children being born today are being born to single women. And they're going to be raised in homes without fathers. And we have so much research right now showing the importance of fathers in their children's lives, you know, in their long-term social, emotional, and physical well-being. And yet our cultural shift, because women have made such strides economically and men have struggled economically since 2008, 2/3 of all jobs today for professionals are going to women. And so I'm concerned, what's the next version of fatherhood that we're going to see if we have the majority of children being raised in single mother homes? What will be the role of fathers? How will this co-parenting exist if it does? And if we continue to diminish the role of fathers and the importance of the physical play and the nurturing and the different way of being with their children, I don't know where we go next. So I'm concerned that we're seeing another shift on the horizon.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think there's, you know, I think the role of the mother is, you know, can't be overstated, and neither can the role of the father. And, you know, often the father can step away from the child, unlike the mom. I mean, the mom can too, but it's much more difficult. And so, you know, it's easy to think that the mom's role is more important. Mm-hmm. I think they equally weigh out. You know, it just points to how important it is that we get involved communally with groups where we can mentor and work with kids who don't have both of their parents accessible and, you know, in a loving relationship with them.
Absolutely. Thank you for taking the call, time to call in, James.
Thanks for the message.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, and talking about the role of fathers, because it's ironic to me that at a time when the absence of fathers has such a large impact on children, we see the research, we talk about the impact on the lives of children who don't have their families, we are moving towards a culture that women are doing better, that as the feminine advances and rises in culture, we see a bigger struggle for men in culture to find their way, therefore this huge imbalance in families. But the research shows that children with active fathers in their lives do better socially, emotionally, and academically, all across the board. And for children with absent fathers, fathers who have been kept out of their children's lives or have been kind of pushed out of the system or for whatever reason aren't involved, children with absent fathers are 5 times more likely to commit suicide. They're 7 times more likely to drop out of school. They're 7 times more likely to be teen parents, and they're 24 times more likely to be runaways. Children with absent fathers have higher drug and alcohol abuse, low self-esteem. It is stunning the difference in the trajectory of life of children with absent fathers and children with active fathers. And so we have to think about, you know, what is the unintended consequence of the shift in our culture where we see, again, 2/3 of children being born to women under the age of 30 are single women. Women who have, or men and women who do not have a college degree, have a much higher incidence of having a child out of wedlock. And that not only has economic repercussions for the children, because it's one thing to have a child and when you're single, if you can afford it, women who are moving into professional jobs have the economic background and support. But remember, that's 35% of our population. 35% of our population has a college degree or higher education. 65% of our population do not. And yet in that 65% of our population that do not have higher education, that may not even have a high school diploma or maybe just some college, almost 85% of those women are having children out of wedlock, which has economic and social repercussions. And we don't talk about that part of our demographics as much as we do the rise of women in culture. 805-781-3875. We're talking about Father's Day and wanting to kind of get your take on your experience with your father and how you're feeling about this Sunday. Do you celebrate? Do you have mixed emotions? Hi, John, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Well, I agree that men are very important, and I know how important I am to my kid, and I get to spend a lot of time. And I have a problem spending time with my dad. I try, but he's always busy, maybe from the war, too, the Vietnam. That could have something to do with it. I spend a lot of time with my grandpa, and I guess I'm kind of more like him. I know things used to be a lot different back in the day. It was more, it was less feminized. Men could get away with more stuff. So now, you know, things have changed a lot. But I guess I would encourage women to let their kids hang out with their dads more if it's a single mom or if they're sharing custody or stuff like that. And I know from studying this, like in Detroit and Ferguson and all these places where they have so many problems, it's because they kick the men out of the house. And then it's almost a job where you get paid by the state or the town to kick the dad out and keep him out. He wants to spend time, then they'll badmouth him and say he doesn't want it. And then he's also paying child support to not be able to see his own kid. So I know I've studied a lot about that. So that's a fact. That's a reality of feminism now.
Well, and John, I appreciate that because, and I don't know if it's a reality of feminism, but I do think that anytime there's cultural or social change, there are unintended consequences that go with the positives. And I think, you know, in many poor communities, lower socioeconomic status communities, those with lower education, lower access to resources, you know, there is a greater struggle for these families that don't have two parents to economically help support the raising of the child, where you have communities that have lost huge portions of their employment. I mean, we can talk about this in many different ways, but when, you know, men are defined by their ability to care for and bring in the resources to the family, when men feel like their worth is defined by being able to provide for their family, and the culture shifts and they're no longer to access the jobs that give them the opportunity to provide for their family, we are going to have this breakdown of the family system. And we've seen this in African-American communities for decades, where men have had less ability to find work within the community or have ended up in prison, and that's diminished their role and their capacity in the family, which has made it difficult for them to have strong relationships with their children. Well, what's interesting is that in 2008, post that drop, we saw that for many white males who had had manufacturing jobs for, you know, 50, 60, 70 years, those jobs went away. And all of a sudden, for these men who had been providers for their family, head of households, had very defined roles in the family, that pulled the rug out from under them. And now they're trying to find their feet again. Who am I if I can't be the provider financially, if my wife is now making more income than I did? And again, I keep looking at that collision of the worlds, you know, those who are 10, 15 years older and those who are right in their 30s and younger who are raising children. They've made a lot of adjustments. There's a lot more egalitarian work. The men of the modern era now are okay with staying home with kids. As a matter of fact, 18% of children are being raised by stay-at-home dads now. And that's an increase of almost 150% over the last two decades. So I keep kind of going back to this collision of eras. How do we look at our relationships with our fathers and be at peace with not just who the man was that raised us, but also how he was influenced by his cultural realities to be the father he came to be? And maybe that would help us to develop more grace and connection with our fathers and kind of heal a lot of those wounds that people tend to carry with them into their adulthood. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Samantha, thanks for waiting. What's on your mind?
Yes, hi. I'm Samantha. I'm 30 years old and definitely celebrating this Sunday. I grew up in a home with kind of different gender roles. My parents, they'll be 70 next year. Mm-hmm. And my mom, she was really driven, first female partner in a law firm. Very successful, very busy, out of the house most of the time. My dad was an elementary school teacher, so his breaks really reflected ours. He had so much patience for us as kids, and that really was huge. We are beyond close. We talk almost every day. And I think, I mean, he grew up in a household where he was really strange from his father. His father dealt with alcoholism and a lot of really hard work out of the house, and I don't really know how he decided to really change that, but we're expecting a baby now, and I've married a man much like that who, you know, just assumes that we're going to take on equal roles as far as raising our kids. And right now I'm kind of the primary breadwinner, and we're, you know, I see him sometimes struggle with needing to be the provider as a man, but it never really occurred to me. So very, very blessed to have my dad.
Thank you for singing the praises, Samantha. And it is interesting because although I hear a lot of men talk about, you know, I'm okay with my wife being the primary wage earner in the families, but there is still that underlying kind of discomfort with those traditional gender roles. And there are millennial couples who have talked about, although we're fine on the surface, there come moments where we start to look at each other and go, shouldn't you be making the money? Because that's what we were used to. And I think we'll see the comfort in that continue to shift as we see more and more women kind of taking leadership in the economy and in those roles. But I think your family is going to be the trailblazers in finding that comfort. I don't think we're quite there yet, but I think your generation will be the trailblazers in kind of opening up the comfort with whoever is the primary wage earner. That's fine. And I also think that for a lot of people, the competition is who gets to stay home and raise the kids, which is much different, right? In the post-feminist movement, everyone wanted out of the house and the opportunity to make a living. And your generation is saying, no, really, the fun part, right, is to stay home and raise the kids. You go work. And I think that's kind of the fun irony of this next generation, is that everyone and many families would like the role of staying at home.
Yeah, I think there's times where I fantasize about being that stay-at-home mom that I never, ever thought I would be, and probably won't be, but, you know, it sounds really nice.
Absolutely. Thank you for taking the time to call
and
sharing your Father's Day stories. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. You're listening to Public Radio KCBX, and we're talking about fathers and their role in our lives. And as Father's Day comes upon us on Sunday. What is it that we feel about our fathers? Do you have those kind of conflicted, ambivalent feelings, or do you feel you had a father that was nurturing and there for you all the time? We're talking about kind of the collision of these two worlds, the cats in the cradle world and kind of moving into this more modern era world of men having more freedom to express themselves in interesting ways. And we'll be back in a moment to take your calls.
He said, thanks for the ball, Dad, come on, let's play. Can you teach me to throw? I said, not today, I got a lot to do. He said, that's okay. And he walked away, but his smile never dimmed. Said, I'm gonna be like him, yeah. You know I'm gonna be like him. And the cats in the cradle and the silver spoon, little boy blue and the man on the moon. When you're coming home, Dad, I don't know.
And that is Harry Chapin and Cats in the Cradle. And I get a little choked up every time I hear the song. Brings back a lot of memories of a childhood. I grew up in that era post-feminist movement. Many, many of my friends' families ended up in divorce and their dads left home. And it was a really challenging time to be young. And it makes me even more thankful that my father fought very hard to be very active in our lives from a young age, coached every team, showed up at every sporting event, supported everything that we did, but at the same time was still a little emotionally distant, not really sure what to do with us, especially the women in our family, because he'd had all boys growing up, wasn't quite sure what to do with me when I started to, you know, be the wild girl of a teen that was new for him, but he hung in there and really wanted to change the experience we had with a father from the experience he had with his father, who wasn't around really at all. And although my dad traveled a lot for his work, he always took one of his kids with him on these road trips to kind of spend time with him and see the world. And so I feel like I was offered this opportunity to glimpse into the possibilities of what those relationships between fathers and their children could be. And my husband went on to kind of be a part of that modern father who was the leader of the campfire group of our girls and taught them to sew and taught them to cook and all those things that would be considered traditionally female that I didn't have to teach my girls, and yet my husband did. And so I'm always interested in how we look back on our relationships with our fathers and how they've impacted our lives. 805-781-3875. Bruce, thanks for waiting. What's on your mind?
So my father was of the World War II era. I was born in 1962. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we all us guys, you know, we used to talk and we were adolescents. And we realized that our fathers, you know, they were emotionally unavailable and quiet, stoic, as you had said. But once we started getting older and had kids, you know, women talk. Women have these groups. You know, the women's movement was huge, mm-hmm. and everyone was talking. You know, it was all over the television. Well, men don't talk. So no one, you know, we knew the way we raised wasn't the way we wanted to raise our children, but we had no one there to tell us how to do it correctly.
Right. Or differently.
So we had to wing it. Mm-hmm. So we just kind of had to. You know, when some of my friends got stuck in the old style of you know, just like their father, and ended up divorced, and I kind of had to find my own way. I had to figure out how to be the dad that I always wanted. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there was no one there. You know, there's something to be said for sitting around the fire and talking. And when you lose that, you know, all my dad wanted to talk about were the Dodgers, the Angels, the Rams. You know, all he wanted to talk about was sports. Mm-hmm. And so I had no one there to say, you know, to guide me. And that, I think, contributed to that lost generation of parenting.
I agree. And it's interesting because, you know, as a psychotherapist, I always look at the different ways people communicate. And I worked a lot with husbands or fathers who were struggling to kind of find their way with their children and said, my father only talked about sports, or we didn't have anything to connect on. And I would help them kind of recognize their father as connecting the best they could through sports as a way of showing their heart and their love. You know, that was the only language they could use to safely connect, but it was them clearly having the heart and wanting connection, because you know, it's not as if we've changed and now the younger fathers like yourself developed this sense of emotion or empathy or feelings. All people have those. It's just as in our culture, they're not as accepted. And so men had to find other ways to communicate their emotions. And it became talking about sports, right? How about them Dodgers? Which if you kind of, I think there was Tim Allen had his show, I can't remember what it's called.
Yeah, Tool Time.
Tool Time.
Home Improvement.
Yes, and he at one point did an episode talking about, you know, kind of dissecting what fathers were saying when they said, how about them Dodgers, which meant I really love you and love spending time with you. And he kind of broke down how to understand what was being said. And I think that is part of the work we have to do, is to understand how men communicate their emotions and their feelings, because it is different than the way women do. You know, women are kind of given those feminine skills of connection and disclosure, and it's encouraged in society. But since we're not giving those gifts to men, how do we help to read between the lines of how they are trying to express their emotions? Because the only way we really see the emotions are when young men start to be angry or violent or get hooked on video games. You know, those are ways of men trying to express what they're feeling, but we're only giving them that limited way of expression that's acceptable. But we have to be able to see that when young men are acting out or feeling angry or disenfranchised or getting numbed by drugs and alcohol and video games, they're trying to express their sense of frustration or loss or sadness, but they don't have the words. They have to use these avenues.
Yeah, and if the fathers spoke more with them, mm-hmm. they would be more comfortable. They would learn by example how to talk about it.
Right. And
you know, my father never once told me he was sorry, and he was wrong. We're all wrong. I can't count how many times I told my sons and my daughter, I'm sorry, I was wrong.
Yeah.
But back then, it was a failure to be wrong. It's humbling to have to say, I'm sorry, I was wrong. You were right.
And if your role in the family, right, is authoritarian and disciplinarian, to say I'm wrong, you lose status in the family. And then the fear is, what if my children don't respect me because I was wrong? So it's a backward thinking. But
it is. You should gain status by saying, I'm sorry, I was wrong.
But we're getting there, Bruce.
Thank you.
Thanks for taking the time to call. If you're just tuning in, this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and we're talking about the changing role of fathers and honoring fathers as Father's Day comes closer this Sunday. And how will you celebrate your father? Do you give him a call? Do you just feel sad? Will you miss him? Will you reach out? How have those roles changed? And it's interesting because I talked a little bit about, as the feminine in our culture rises, right, becomes more active, even though in the face of our administration that is the old guard, patriarch, hyper masculinity that we see out there kind of gasping for air, there is still culturally a rise in the feminine and the value of women out in the workplace. And this is the first generation, these 25 and unders, is the first generation that's going to be raised by primarily women who have household wage earner jobs. They are going to be facing the economic fact that they're not going to maybe exceed their parents' achievements. This new generation of fathers weren't raised in a culture where the norm was this locker room talk, because the feminist movement kind of changed that cultural norm. But the thing that we need to be careful with is, just because we see the feminine rising and women making strides in culture, we need to be careful that we don't see men become more disenfranchised. We see young men being pushed out of the opportunities in culture. They're not making the strides in education that women are. They're not being encouraged to be involved in their education. We see, you know, the predominance of diagnoses of ADHD to young boys in school, which makes it very challenging for them to succeed. We see the reduction in play on school grounds, on playgrounds, the reduction in PE. All of these things were very supportive of that more masculine style of learning and growing. And so as we see the world of education become dominated by more female teachers, where are we going to find the mentors to help raise the next generation of young men? Again, it's almost as if young children, not just boys, but children are being in some ways pushed further away from access to their fathers or male models, role models and mentors. And so we're going to have to find some balance in some way. 805-781-3875. Do you have some praises to sing of your father as Father's Day comes close this Sunday? Rosemary, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Oh, well, I just wanted to share something. I was raised, I was born in 43, so I was in the United States in the 50s and in school. And we came from Mexico, and my dad, whose name is Leopoldo Labastida, and in the neighborhood called him Papa Polo, I just called him Papa. He was the first feminist I knew in my life without really knowing the word yet, because he had four little girls. I was one of them. And he always encouraged us to do whatever we wanted to do. He participated in any school event, any after-school event. You know, he was a volunteer at the school construction jobs, because he was a welder, but he could also do carpentry and masonry. And that is so unusual when I talk to other people my age who didn't see their father. And in the 50s, there was about 3 or 4 years where he actually let us play hooky, because we played hooky with him. Mm-hmm. He had to work these different shifts, you know, a day shift and then a p.m. shift and then a night shift. And there were times we wouldn't see him as we had before. So as we were getting ready for school, he'd say, "How would you like to go up to the mountains and go to the snow?" And, of course, we were in our jeans in no time and packing lunches, and off we went, spent the whole day with my dad. And then the next day he'd write a letter to each of our teachers saying, my daughter wasn't in school, and this is what she did.
Well,
and that just didn't happen to any of my friends. And I learned a lot of things, you know, by being with him. He taught me chess. He made a bow and a quiver of arrows when he saw I was really an athlete when I was young. He went to as many swim meets as he could, given his work schedule. And because he could speak English better than my mom, he's the one that went to all the conferences with the teachers. So he knew exactly our weak spots and our strengths at school. And he would help us at school at home with those, knowing, you know, language was still a barrier.
Well, and Rosemary, thank you for calling in with the stories, because you bring up so many good points. You know, when fathers are given the opportunity to be engaged in their children's lives, they thrive. And when we created a cultural divide where men were supposed to go out to work and leave home and put on their hat and be gone for 80 hours a week, we culturally push fathers out of the family system and out of the opportunity to be with their children. You know, men are now having to fight to have the time to teach their children all the things they want to teach them. And it's interesting also that the research shows that, you know, fathers have a completely different way of being with their children that's just as important as being with mothers. They teach children to communicate differently, to play differently, to experience the world through a different lens, that both the father and the mother's worldviews and experiences are essential to helping children have a full effect, a full opportunities to experience the world. So it's interesting, your father kind of brought a bit of that old school involvement in the family into the 50s, and I'm sure a lot of your friends wish they'd had. They probably spent a lot of time at your house. Julie, what's on your mind?
Hi.
Hi, thanks for calling.
Hi. I was thrust into a single-parent family as my father, today's my father's birthday, and he was killed in a tragic car accident on the way home from work. And I had two older sisters, and my mother was pregnant with my little brother at the time. So it was foreign for me to walk into my girlfriend's house where there was a father. It mm-hmm. was just like another world to me. And I know my oldest sister helped to raise us, so she never had children. She's married, but didn't ever want to go through that. My other sister, college educated, traveled the world. Me, I think I was impacted the most. Just, I don't know why, but I had no role model as a marriage. And, you know, I always think I always wanted to be married because I thought, oh, well, that's completion. That's a complete life.
Right. That's the goal.
When you're married and have, yeah. So, but I didn't have the role model, so I failed. But I have three children, one when I was married and two out of wedlock, and dated because, like my mother did, hoping to find a complete family. And she never married until I was 18, though. And I couldn't find anyone to love my children as much as I felt they should. So I never remarried. So it had a huge impact. And, you know, now they're all grown. They're all fine, as far as I know, you know. But, yeah, it was very strange for me. And I didn't even know any families who got divorced when I was growing up as well. So I did everything I could. My mother was amazing. She taught us all how to cook, how to clean, how to sew. She took us to Disneyland on vacation. She drove us to Colorado for summer vacations. My father's family always embraced us because we lived in the L.A. area because he had been in the Navy. So they wrapped their arms around us. So there was a lot. We lived on a cul-de-sac. Everybody was a family on that street. So we had a lot of love and support from everyone around us. Mm-hmm. But there was always somewhere underneath, like, oh, you know, the poor Austin kids.
Right. So, well, and that emptiness carries on. And that's kind of the it depends part, right? We can try to do everything perfectly, but then life happens and we can lose our father or work takes over. And, you know, in the best of worlds, we try to provide everything for our children, but then life takes over and different things impact us in different ways. And I think that's a big piece of it also.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, we're all really grateful. We just absolutely adored our mother. They're both, you know, my mother's gone now also, but you ask any of us and she's the greatest heroine on the planet.
And that seems to be the way it goes. We start talking about mothers and they are the sainted ones. And our fathers, well, we struggle sometimes, but I think that impact of fathers in our lives never goes away. Paula, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi. Yeah, I just wanted to give you, just tell you a little bit about my father. I'm almost 60, and he's passed away a number of years ago now, but he was in World War II, and he was an officer, and he served under Patton, and he was devoted to my mom. He was a wonderful provider. And came back from the war, all that, you know. And he was not a warm, fuzzy dad. I mean, we got hugs and stuff, but he was, you know, but he was not the disciplinarian either. My mother was a disciplinarian. And he never spoke of his experiences during the war. He was over in Germany, but he spoke of, you know, growing up and things he did as a kid and et cetera, all that. And when I had his first grandchild, he turned into this totally fuzzy, warm teddy bear. You know, my daughter could do no wrong. She was, you know, he was just like totally hugs and kisses and loving and just because then he could relax. You know, he wasn't in charge. He wasn't having to be the provider or whatever. And he was somebody who was we respected, would never have thought of talking back to him. Mm-hmm. He never hit us or anything like that. He was a very caring person, but he taught us good work ethics. You know, we had chores and stuff, and we were that's how we grew up. You know, you earn what you work for. And when we didn't get money for doing chores, that was just part of, you know, what we were supposed to do. And so it really developed a good work ethic in us. And but I think with my daughter coming along, that's when he got to just totally be a, you know, like I said, the teddy bear grandpa.
Absolutely.
But but I disagree with what has been said before, and I think that when they're talking about men's choices or young men's choices and acting out and such, I think you have a choice. You have a choice. The men, young men, I have three sons and a daughter, and you have a choice of how you act and how you react. And I've been a single mom for a number of years. My ex-husband was abusive, And so my younger sons have nothing to do with their father, and they're in their 20s now. And it's like I never pushed it. I never pushed it either way. It was like when you're old enough to make a choice of if you want to have a relationship with this man, you can.
And, you know, I appreciate that, Paula. I'm sorry I lost you. When we talk about behavior and children and choices, I kind of want to stay with this idea that children learn so much from their experience of being with their father and those different traits that men pass on to their children. And I kind of want to leave you with a couple of things to think about when you think about your relationship with your father moving into Father's Day on Sunday, that in a culture that kind of stopped valuing some of the core characteristics that were once kind of applied to the masculine of the family, right? Those core characteristics of strength and virtue and honor and competence, you know, those things that we saw in the men who were the leaders of their household or were told to go off and fight in the wars or were told to provide for the family or take care of the family farm, there came a point where we started to diminish the value of the strength in a man or the masculine or the importance of virtue or honor or competence. And when we start to look at not just the aspects of emotion or feelings or communication as being the things that make a father a good father, but we start to realize that it's all of these aspects that for men, the way they show their love for their family or the way that they nurture their children can be in the way that they want to protect and provide and to maybe in their stoicism show quiet leadership, and that all of those skills are important in creating a wholeness in our culture and in our families and in all of our lives. And so this has been a conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. And as we started off the show talking about Cats in the Cradle and Harry Chapin from 1974, it's wonderful to see how we have new stories that constantly emerge in our culture. And we've had kind of this emerging modern fatherhood. And I think in 1998 is when we kind of kicked this new modern era off. Will Smith reworked a song by Bill Withers and Grover Washington called Just the Two of Us. He sampled their original lyrics and then changed the lyrics to focus on his relationship as a dad with his new son, and sang so beautifully about his new role as a father and where he wanted to take this relationship. And so I leave you with this song by Will Smith, Just the Two of Us, and I wish you well this weekend. Thank you for supporting Public Radio KCBX. You can find our show at kcbx.org and also podcast on iTunes. You can leave me a message on our Facebook page or to Elizabeth at thereluctanttherapist.com.
First time the doctor placed you in my arms, I knew I'd meet death before I let you meet harm. Although questions arose in my mind, would I be man enough against wrong? Choose right and be standing up. From the hospital that first night, took an hour just to get the car seating right. People driving all fast got me kind of upset. Got you home safe, placed you in your bassinet. That night, I don't think one wink I slept as I slipped out my bed to your crib. I crept, touched your head gently. Felt my heart melt, cause I knew I loved you more than life itself. Into my knees, and I begged the Lord, please let me be a good daddy. All he needs, love, knowledge, discipline too. I pledge my life to you.
Just the two of us, we can make it if we try.
Just me and you, just me and you.
Just the two of us. Just the two of us.
Years old, bringing comedy every time I look at you. I think, man, a little me just like me. Wait and see, gonna be tall. Makes me laugh cause you got your dad's ears and all. Sometimes I wonder what you gonna be. A general, a doctor, maybe an MC. I wanna kiss you all the time, but I will test that butt when you cut out a line. True that, why you do that? I try to be a tough dad, but you be making me laugh. Crazy joy when I see the eyes of my baby boy. I pledge to you, I will always do everything I can. Show you how to be a man. Dignity, integrity, honor, and I don't mind if you lose, long as you came with it. And you can cry, ain't no shame in it. It didn't work out with me and your mom, but yo, push come to shove, you was conceived in love. So if the world attacks and you slide off track, remember one fact, I got your back.
Just the two of us, we can make it if we try.
Just me and you, just me and you.
Just the two of us.
a full-time job to be a good dad. You got so much more stuff than I had. I gotta study just to keep with the changing times. 101 Dalmatians on your CD-ROM. See me, I'm trying to pretend I know on my PC where that CD go. But yo, ain't nothing promised, one day I'll be gone. Feel the strife, but trust life does go on. But just in case, it's my place to impart. One day some girl's gonna break your heart. And ooh, ain't no pain like from the opposite sex. Gonna hurt bad, but don't take it out on the next, son. Throughout life, people will make you mad, disrespect you and treat you bad. Let God deal with the things they do, cause hate in your heart will consume you too. Always tell the truth, say your prayers, hold doors, pull out chairs, easy on the swears. You're living proof that dreams come true. I love you and I'm here for you.
Just the two of us.
Just me and you, just me and you. Taking the world. Can't hold us down. Hold my hand, hold my hand. Just me and you.
I'm always here for you.
Look over your shoulder, I'll be there.
Whatever you need, woo, just call on me.
We gon' rise,
whatever
we
you
gon'
need,
shine.
I'll be there for you anytime, you and I.
True that, true that.
Just the two.
Life.
That's a really good song.
How much am I getting paid for this, Dad?